Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we are discussing the recent Warner Brothers news about putting their entire 2021 slate in theaters the same day and date as HBO Max, what this could mean for the future of movie theaters, and even have an interview from a theater general manager on the havoc 2020 has wrecked on their industry. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. You're joining me today. I'm my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. You know, in Florida, I believe we're about to instate a rule where we have to have at least 20 people in a gathering at this point.
I think Florida is going all for it. Yeah. Balls out, I believe, is what they're calling it.
Right.
And, well, speaking of balls out, Amanda couldn't be here, so filling in for her this week is Mr. Brian Williams, one of the original hosts of The Hollywood Outsider. Welcome back, Brian.
Hey guys, good to be back. And yeah, you kind of beat me to the balls out joke. So
I heard you going for it, and I just like, it's mine.
I'm taking it. No, man, it's good to be here. Good to play around with you guys a little bit.
Yeah, and next week we're gonna have our annual holiday special, which this year it's kind of a collection of great holiday specials from the past. You know, just to celebrate because we're coming into our 10th year, and Brian makes quite an appearance, I will say. As Saint Dick. So.
Do you want to tell him how you tried to put it behind a paywall, but then I talked you out of it?
Well, I wasn't going to, but thanks. I was just going to make it just for Patreon people because I'm that guy. And then John's heart grew three sizes and said, no, let's make sure everybody can hear it. So there you go.
Yeah. So, you know, the guy who hates Christmas was like, you know, if that doesn't sound very Christmassy, Aaron.
I was just trying to have enough money to buy presents, man. It's all right. That's all I was going for.
That's okay. I just want to be able to afford that newspaper I was going to get you.
I appreciate that. You know what? Speaking of Christmas, be sure to listen to our interview with Fat Man directors Ian and Esham Nelms. It's now on your podcast feed. It's a lot of fun. They talk about Fat Man, Mel Gibson, working with him, working with Walton Goggins, and I think you guys will really enjoy it. And I want to lead with this because we're not really doing news or breaking anything. We have one central topic for this episode. But before I get there, I can't not mention this because I've been doing this for a long time and I mention it every time this news kind of comes up. But I have to mention Spider-Man 3 is bringing back Doc Ock and Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield. So the Marvel Cinematic Universe is definitely branching off into the multiverse, Spider-Verse, whatever. I kind of want all the Uncle Bens to return, but that's another point that I'm sure nobody wants to hear right now. Is that exciting for you guys? Do you want to see all the Spider-Mans come together in one movie?
No.
Why?
No.
Why not?
I think we already got this movie with the Spider-Verse movie. What was it? Which Spider-Man is that?
It was literally Into the Spider-Verse.
Into the Spider-Verse, yeah. But I'm trying to... I'm forgetting the Spider-Man's name. Morales?
Miles Morales.
There we go. So we got that with Miles Morales' cartoon movie, which is actually, if you haven't seen it yet, shame on you, because that's one of the best comic book movies ever made, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And it has so much heart, so much everything to it. Now, to do it all over again in a live action movie, if they can't find a way to bring Miles Morales into this as well, or that just like slows me down a bit.
Yeah. I'm done with Tobey Maguire and Garfield.
Did you call him Tobey Maguire?
I think he did. I'm like, did he gain weight?
Some kind of Freudian slip or something. I don't know. No, I'm done with him. It's kind of like they were both good in their own rights. But I'm past them. So I if it's a small cameo, fine. You know, if they're there for a small 30-second scene or less, I'm good with it. Sure. It's a nod to the past. And if everybody's willing to play, sure, go ahead. But if it's any kind of significant roles that last throughout a movie, much less, more, then I don't want them anything to do with it. It only proves my point in the Facebook group that Tom Holland is just not carrying Spider-Man like he should, or that Spider-Man is such a weak hero that he needs all the help that he could possibly get to make him bankable.
See, I was with you, well, and then you had to speak the rest of that sentence, and it just ruined it.
Yeah, I was about to actually say, do you think that Tobey Maguire is going to show him how to be a better Peter Parker, and do you think Andrew Garfield is going to show him how to be a better Spider-Man?
Yes, they should.
So like the two of them combined will create the best Spider-Man we've ever had?
Yeah, I'm good with that. Make that happen. I would watch that, and I totally agree with the first half of what Brian said. The second half is just nonsense, and I'm not going to hear it. So, Spider-Man is the greatest hero of all time. I do think it's weird. They're going to have Doc Ock back, too, so I assume Toby and Kirsten Dunst is going to go after Doc Ock in some way, and then they're going to have Andrew Garfield because Jamie Foxx is coming back, so he's going to go after Electro. And I'm like, of all the heroes in those first two movies, Electro is the one you're going to go for? Okay. That's different. See what they do. But I'm with Brian. I don't want, if you're going to do it, don't do much, because all that does is show that Tom Holland can't carry it by himself.
And Holland's my favorite out of all three. Holland's my favorite.
What? Just stop talking, Brian. I mean, I really. Hey,
Andrew Garfield, come on.
I think we know why you left the podcast.
Garfield wasn't nerdy enough. Sorry.
I know. I wanted to have sex with him, honestly.
He was a little too cool for Peter Parker.
He was a little, he had a little too much swag.
Yeah, I looked at him, I was like, yeah, he could totally get it.
Yep.
I really want to see Tobey Maguire now, because if he's put on any weight, there's no way I can get past that at this point. I'm just going to be like, he is kind of tubby. I mean.
He's going to be exactly the Jake Johnson Spider-Man from Into the Spider-Verse. Just like kind of out of shape, still kind of climbing walls, but not really doing it enthusiastically. MJ has left him on the side of the road somewhere. It's just him in the pizza boxes.
So sad. So sad. All right, guys, let's get into what we're going to talk about. Now, this is the crux of most of this week's episode, okay? Because that's how big this news could be, potentially, might end up not being as big as they originally thought, seeing how the talent is reacting. But originally, HBO Max made a deal with a handful of theater chains to simultaneously release Wonder Woman 1984 in theaters and on HBO Max, the streaming service, the very same day and date. Both parties agreed to it because of the circumstances of theaters currently. Obviously, COVID's a very prominent thing still. Last week, HBO Max dropped further news that they will be debuting all of their 2021 releases. That's Matrix 4, Conjuring 3, Godzilla vs. Kong, In the Heights, lots more, on HBO Max and in theaters on the exact same day and date. The thing is, theaters haven't, as of this recording, agreed to that. So they just announced it. They're just like, well, we're going to do this. And they didn't even talk to theater owners about it. Also, the creatives and talent behind those films had no idea. They were told 30 minutes before this was announced, so they didn't know. So there's a lot of people whose entire financial package is based on how much business it does in the theater. So obviously there's some issues there, as well as many of the creators were very, very upset because they wanted the theatrical experience. That's why they made the deal with Warner Brothers. That's all they wanted to do. Okay, so Christopher Nolan, I think, even called, not I think, I know, he even called HBO Max the worst streaming service over this. Like, he's that pissed. And I know some people are like, well, he's an egomaniac, which is fair. But on the same token, I get where he's coming from. I mean, if you make a deal and they change the terms of that deal, that would upset some people. Now, currently, HBO Max is stating that this is only for 1 year due to COVID. But the internet is already reacting as if this is the new way to do things. So let's get into this, because theaters are upset. Talent is upset. HBO Max is super excited. But what were your initial reactions when you first heard this news?
I'm going to be pretty honest in that I...
No lie.
My initial reflex was, this is pretty great.
Wait, say that again, because I can't decide if you're going to stay on this show or not.
between my Spider-Man comments and your honesty,
I'm just done.
It's a one-man show after tonight.
What do you mean after tonight, Brian? You want to go hang out and play video games or something? We can
let's
go
do it.
That.
Hey, he's let's got go. It. He's obviously got it from here. So.
He obviously doesn't need us.
All right, fair. I should allow other points of view. Whatever. Continue. You were all for. Why did you think it was great? Why were you excited about it?
Well, you know, from my point of view, as I made a joke of earlier, Florida is in a weird place when it comes to COVID, and I really hate going a lot of places because it's such a weird place when it comes to COVID. So, understanding that, yes, we have a virus coming out, not a virus, but a
no, the virus.
We're having
is
another virus coming out. It's going to be great. It's going to premiere in 3 months.
It's lasting longer than the Friday the 13th franchise.
Right. We have a vaccine coming out, and I realize that in 3 to 6 months, where a lot of people are going to be vaccinated, hopefully, this is Florida, you never can tell. And sure, in 3 to 6 months, we'll be able to start going to the theater pretty freely. At the same time, up until that point, it's still going to be kind of scary because it's my only couple of theater experiences through COVID were kind of scary to me. So, yeah, that's why I was kind of excited about this.
For me, it was just kind of, I don't know, I just kind of went past the initial shock and, oh my God, this is the end of theaters. The sky is falling stuff straight to what is this going to do down the road? You know, there's going to be a lot of initial reactions. There's going to be a lot of deals being struck. There's going to be maybe some other studios are going to kind of do a lot like you see in sports. You see one team doing something. There's, you know, a lot of teams kind of do the copycat type of thing. So, you know, will other studios do something similar? So, maybe this goes away in 6 months. Maybe this last all the way through 2021. Maybe it goes further. I don't think it's as bad as what the doomsayers are saying right now at the time of recording. However, there's bound to be some permanent changes made in the next 6 months, 9 months, maybe a year. That will last for quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, this I feel very differently about this than I did the AMC Universal deal, because I thought that was a little crazy at the time, but I kind of understood it. This one I didn't understand. Like, just because I know the theatrical business so well, and I know the home video business so well, and I know how those metrics work and how the finances work, and it blew my mind. It's just like, did they not do math here? I don't understand. I mean, the math does not check out for blockbusters. I mean, it checks out for mid-range films, no problem. But when you start talking blockbusters and how they're $200 million movies and then $200 million of marketing, you know, everybody just goes strictly by the budget. It's never that simple. It's always double. So originally I was just like blown away by that. Then I launched into angry because I feel like I've been defending theaters for the last 7 months for some reason. And then you get people that are, as soon as you say, I don't like this, you know, I don't like what the potential impact could be on theaters and theater owners and theater employees, you know, you get the blowback because there's many people who rightfully enjoy the comfort of their couch. And they just, that's all they want. And I'm just like, that's fine, but I don't. So I want to support the theater business. And so they jump at me. And then it's like this just, you know, so we're just basically internet fighting, which goes nowhere. It's a pointless exercise. I don't know why you do it. And I don't know why I do it. But so I was in that mode for a big portion of at least the first day, you know, before I settled down and said, kind of where Brian is, where I'm like, I don't think this is going to bring theaters down. I really don't. I really don't think, especially once I heard theaters hadn't agreed to this, because I couldn't have imagined for the life of me that they would. It made no sense financially for a theater organization to agree to that deal. And comes out they didn't. They didn't even know about it. So I felt a little better as the day went on, because I'm like, well, I mean, they can hope to have day and date in theaters, but if no theaters are going to play their movies, it's just going to be day and date streaming, and that kills their financial motives. Like, they're not going to make enough on subscriptions to generate a huge tentpole every single month.
Yeah, that's kind of maybe segues into the business sense, because that's what I don't understand. I get the fact that it'll boost subscriptions, And I did a little research, ooh, believe it or not.
What?
Oh, everybody get ready. Look, you're going to be dazzled.
Let's see. According to Barron's website yesterday.
Ooh, Barron's.
I just want to clarify. I hear paper. He's gone old school with his notes right now. He's like, yeah? I got some information.
I heard that people don't like the typing sounds during a podcast. You know, the shuffling, the flipping of paper. It lasts a lot shorter.
The shuffling of paper makes it more atmospheric for the listeners.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
It's like breaking news. Breaking news. Yeah.
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 So, all right. So from a business sense, right? Barron's yesterday reports that HBO Max will account for an approximate $1 to $5 bump in AT&T stock prices.
Okay.
So that makes sense. Also understand that this can boost their number of subscribers. So according to CNBC's article today, which is December 8th, September 30th, they had 8.6 million subscribers. As of today, technically yesterday, that was when the interview with the president was, it was up to 12.6 million. Mm-hmm. So they gained 4 million in, 2 months?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's actually faster than that because just a couple of days ago, there was a report that said that they were at 9 million subscribers.
Their goal is to have 50 million subscribers by 2025. They launched in May of this year, so that you're looking at 7 months. They're already basically 25% of the way there. This move obviously will boost their subscribers pretty rapidly. So, it's just a matter of hanging on to them after 2021. So all of that makes sense. I just don't understand why. And I guess to your point to where you said, you know, all these metrics and how all that stuff works. So it actually makes me feel a little bit better that you don't understand it either.
I don't.
Where you've got, I see the benefits of this move. I just don't see the sacrifice. Because what do you have to lose if you wait, just say 2 weeks, forget the 17 days, just mm-hmm. say, all right, you know what, 2 weeks after this comes out, we'll have it on HBO Max. What's wrong with that? Because you're still making money.
Well, part of what their argument right now is why they're doing it is because, and it is a direct quote from the head of Warner Brothers, they're trying to develop a unique consumer-focused distribution model as opposed to trying to work through all the other distribution models they've been working through through the years. So mm-hmm. whether that's a fancy way of saying we just want to go directly to our users so we can build up our subscriptions, or whether it's, hey, we don't need those guys, let's show you how it's really done kind of thing. I don't know, but yeah.
This is a personal opinion. I mean, I have some numbers to back it up, but I don't have enough where I would say that this is definitely why. But I agree with what you're saying is that they're trying to force some hands is what I'm getting. Really, in terms of how Universal approached things, because if you remember when Trolls came out, shortly after, they said they were going to do the same thing. They alluded to it. And then they said, that's not what we meant. It is totally what they meant. They meant day and date is what they were looking to do in the future. And AMC and other theater chains revolted against that. And then suddenly, about a month later, 3 weeks later, whatever the number was, they came out with a deal for the 17-day window where they're going to, basically theaters will have an exclusive right to it for 17 days. And then after that, it can go on video on demand or Blu-ray or whatever. And, actually the theater chains will even get a little bit of a cut of that. Now, to me, that says that HBO Max is trying to do a very similar thing, which is, even though we're using the COVID as cover, we're just doing this for COVID. You're planning a whole year out for COVID. That feels like a stretch. But, as after this year has been the way it has, I mean, you could make that argument and probably carry some weight.
There's a little bit of validity to that.
Sure. Yeah. But it feels very much to me like a similar situation where they were using that because they didn't confirm with theaters. They didn't confer with talent. It feels like this is a move because they feel like they have theaters in a position where they have to make an adjustment. They want to get a similar adjustment to what Universal got, but probably hope for a better deal because they think they've got a better slate. So if we announce we've got the whole slate, we're going to do that. And you can either come with us theaters and reap the benefits in the theaters or make a deal with us and maybe we can do that 2 weeks or whatever the window might be. That's what I feel like it's coming across as. Just because of, especially now that we've, because we gave this topic time, we wanted to actually give it time for more information to come out before we just did an instant podcast like so many were and they've already got so much stuff wrong. We wanted to give it time so we knew what was going on. And talent didn't know. They're all pissed about this. Theaters didn't know. They're all pissed about this. And now they're all, theaters are saying, we're going to basically, we put out urgent talks to Warner Brothers. So it seems to me like this was possibly what their plan was originally and initially was, we're going to jumpstart some talks for closing those exclusivity windows because we're tired of this 90-day, 45-day thing. We want it to be a couple weeks tops.
Well, actually, I'm also suspect of the timing of it for another reason, which, I mean, everything you're saying makes sense. And especially when I look at when I was making the graphic for this episode, I couldn't get graphics or good graphics for it. Half the stuff that's created, half the stuff that's in the slate is still either in some level of production or, you know, hasn't completely started production or something. So you can't even get good graphics or like a movie poster to create the background graphics. So I kind of take that plus what you're saying and say there's probably a lot of truth to it. Also, what's coming up this week, which we're recording this on December 8th, on Thursday of this week, this is a Tuesday, the December 8th is the 10th. That's the quarterly meeting for Disney, where Disney announces a bunch of what they're going to be doing. And I wouldn't be surprised if Warner Brothers wanted to beat Disney to the table on this, because if Disney were the ones to sit there and say, okay, we're going to go ahead and do this before Warner Brothers, that you know, Universal's a good company, but they're not as big as Warner Brothers, and neither one of them are nearly as big as Disney. So they possibly wanted to beat Disney to the table as far as forcing the hand of a conversation before Disney does more or less the exact same thing.
No, interesting. I don't know what the advantage is of going first with that news, though. To me, it's almost would be better to go second, where you don't get as much backlash.
Disney can probably come in and strong arm some sort of deal and say, we want this kind of this kind of treatment, and we don't want you to be able to give anybody else this sort of treatment. And if Warner Brothers beats them to at least getting some sort of agreement before this, it's like, that's
kind of where I see what you're saying. All right.
And Disney could, I think they have the weight of the world and they've got a lot of stuff. And probably by the time you hear this, they might have already announced whatever they're going to do. And they're definitely going to do something. I mean, Disney's not one to sit on their laurels, and they've got to make their investors happy with no theme parks, no movie. I mean, they're going to do something. I just don't know if they're going to do this because
Radio Disney just got shut down today.
I know. It's very sad, right?
Yeah.
So if you used to listen to Radio Disney, listen to Hollywood Outsider instead. It's better.
Yeah. We're better. Less kid friendly. Fuck them.
Shut. But here's one thing, like from a business perspective, Brian, like you were talking about. If you're talking about $150, $200 million tentpole movies, that's basically, you need 15 to 20 million subscriptions a month just to pay for one of those a month, right? Because when you're thinking of budget and marketing, just for one of them.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm saying it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. I mean, now, some people have said, well, they've got TV shows that cost like 10 or 15. And like the premiere ones cost 10 or 15 million an episode. Most of them do not. So that's a fallacy. That's not accurate.
Yeah, that's a very, very small percentage of the shows that are being produced out there.
Exactly. I mean, Netflix is notorious for not paying tons of money for shows that aren't extremely popular. And I understand that users that say this way, like everyone wins, it's just not true, because theaters have zero advantage here in this scenario. Too many people would just have like this viewing party at home or torrent the movie rather than go to the theater. So business-wise, I mean, it doesn't make sense for them to ever agree to that. It really doesn't. There's too many people are just more comfortable sitting at home. And I know some people are like, well, then what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. But they're in business. So they got to think of themselves. That's their primary goal. Consumers, you think of yourself. That's your primary goal. But theaters have to think of themselves. And for them, the two-week window, which you're going to hear from a theater general manager later, and he'll kind of explain that the first 2 weeks are really where it matters for theaters. If they keep that exclusive, I don't think most theater chains are going to complain. Like, that feels like where we're headed. That feels like when people are talking about the future of the business, that feels more like the future. Putting a day and date feels like you just don't care about the theatrical experience at all to me. And I want to say, like, streaming is definitely an aspect of the future. It's amazing to me that people don't see that. It's definitely an aspect. It's here, you know, thanks Netflix. But as much as people who love this idea want to proclaim that theaters were dying, that's not true. The numbers completely disagree with that. And you can keep telling me that until you're stone cold dead in the face. It's not accurate. The numbers, the U.S. box office has topped $11 billion every single year since 2015. Very consistently. It hasn't dropped. It hasn't plummeted. It wasn't dying, quote unquote. You might have had more flops that were noticeable and whatnot, but it has been consistently $11 billion U.S. because we're focused mostly on the U.S. in this scenario. U.S., it has remained consistently. Globally, it's through the roof. So theatrical is through the roof globally. It doesn't make any sense to make that argument. Theaters are not dying. It's just been a year that nobody could have anticipated. And it feels like studios are kind of using that to their advantage, and that's what business does. So you can't really fault them for that to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, in crisis, you know, there's opportunity. And
right.
And just like, you know, as a consumer, you know, hey, I'm more concerned about my budget, my family, that kind of stuff. And if I can watch a brand new release for $15, you know, one charge of $15 per month versus, what, let's say a family of four, you're looking at $60 just for tickets. You know, I mean, per week, that adds up. So, I mean, I get it, but also get the business side where it says, okay, look, this is an opportunity that maybe we're accelerating the timeline where this, we had a goal to be at this point, maybe 3 years from now, maybe 4 years from now. However, if we tweak this and we do this, bam, we can, yeah, we're going to ruffle some feathers, but we can get 3 or 4 years ahead of the game here. And, of course that makes them happy.
When this all announcement came out, there was the voices of those people who were extremely excited about this whole idea of not having to go to the theater. Mm-hmm. They could not be missed. So what do you think is the reason why there are that many people who aren't interested in going to the theater anymore, beyond laziness? Because I don't know if I agree with laziness.
I think it's like any other polarizing subject. I think you got a very loud minority of people that feel a certain way, and some, you know, and they're going to just rant and rave, and they're much more vocal about it than the average person who maybe just reads the headline but doesn't really grasp what the article's about.
Right.
Yeah, because I'll be honest. I mean, I talk to a lot of people that love movies, obviously, and the majority can't wait to go back to the theater when it's safe. They don't want to go right now, obviously. And so right now it's more comfortable and safe for them to watch at home. But I can't tell you how many are like, man, as soon as theaters are open and I feel good about it, even though I still think they're safe, but whatever. Contact tracing, who needs that? those people are saying they're gonna go. And you know, when I held that, I rented out a theater for the Conjuring party when I had people come to the theater to watch the Conjuring safely, safe distance, mask, the whole thing. There were people that had been very excited about streaming stuff from home, and they came out and they loved it. They were just happy to be back in a theater again. So I'm with Brian. I think it's a very vocal minority, but it, you know, just like anything else, as soon as something goes in their favor that they hear, they get very vocal. They get very excited, like, ha ha, and it's a whole finger pointing. Gotcha. Right.
Told you. Me, mm-hmm. me.
You know, I kind of sit in the middle of that. I love going to the theater. I love staying at home and watching stuff at home. I don't really... the only times where I start to display a preference is like what kind of theater experience I'm having. Now, of course, I live in Florida, so I never know what's going to happen when I go to the theater, when I go to the average theater. Because, you know, the average theater here in Florida, is you can't really... distinguished from the dollar theater. They're about the same exact theater, only one smells a little bit less like urine than the other. And
well, you know, to be fair, me and Aaron have both been with you to your theater of choice. And
yeah,
I mean, it's,
that was great, wasn't it?
It's, yeah, I mean, it's like Ruth's Chris of movie theaters. It's,
yeah, it was fantastic.
It's a little ridiculous, really. I mean, it really is.
It's a bit much, but it's nice.
The waiter had like 15 watches, and we didn't know why he had 15 watches
and
on his arm.
Waiter. And listeners, that statement alone should give you the full picture. The waiter at this movie theater.
Right.
But like, that's
the maitre d' showed us in. I mean, you know, it was fine after that.
Cloth napkins, actual silverware.
Wiped my ass. And I don't know why. I wasn't sweaty. It was weird, but he did.
But all that being said, you guys make fun of my favorite theater all you want.
I wasn't making fun of it. I was just explaining that you obviously make more than us.
Yes, you have higher standards in your cinematic experience than we do.
I do have higher standards in my cinematic experience.
Hello.
I do expect.
Boys, would you like to go see Spider-Man today? Okay, thank you.
Hey, you know what? When I start a movie and the waiter takes my order and says, now, do you want another beer brought to you 45 minutes into the movie? No, I want two more beers brought to me 45 minutes into the movie, sir. And he says, that'll be easy for me to handle. And I say, thank you very much for bringing me my beer. But this goes to
truffles.
With truffles and like fries that are truffled and everything. They're fantastic.
John,
chef kiss.
Let's get to your point, because all you're doing is making me feel like you're picking down on the poor people again.
I'm not picking on the poor people, but my point is this, is that I don't want to worry too much about what could happen to the theater experience, because in this whole little exercise we just went through, we just talked about one of the great things that could happen to the theater experience, where it can actually evolve to something more than just cafeteria level bullshit.
Sure.
And become more of a greater experience. I think that's where if the theater wants to be better than the home experience, they need to do something like that.
I mean, I think they already are better, but that's a point for another day. Let's talk about why theater specifically should or shouldn't, speaking of your segue, should or shouldn't agree to day and date simultaneous releases, and if they should be open to renegotiating the windows to begin with. And theaters, just to explain real quick, theaters require exclusive rights to a film to show it in their theater before the film moves to home video, on demand, Blu-ray, DVD, whatever. Typically, it's been 90 days in the past, but like I said, recently AMC and Cinemark theaters struck that deal with Universal to shorten that window to 17 days, and the theater chain will also get a cut of the digital revenues in that deal to compensate for the shortened windows. So in terms of should be renegotiating those windows, why should this be a thing? Why should this be the future, in your opinion?
People's attention spans are getting shorter and shorter, and to be able to capitalize on a movie's release and then for it to be released on demand or on video, one of those things, the window would be being shorter would be greater, because again, there's just so much coming at us at one time. I think that the ability to basically shotgun a movie into our head at the movie theater, and then that movie coming out 2 weeks later where we can either have it on our hand or have it on VOD, they're likely to make a lot more money off of it.
Is anyone concerned about the fact that we as a world are becoming, I want it now?
Yeah.
But yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
let me introduce you to 2020. Have you met?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if they should. I kind of like the idea that the movie is out for a few weeks or so before it's widely accessible on your phones and Apple TVs or Rokus or whatever, or VOD. That being said, I read in one of those like 30 articles that you sent. So good job on procuring all of that stuff.
They just turned into one article in my head. So yeah. I don't even know what I read anymore.
I wanted
well, there
to
were
be
certain
informed.
Keywords that certain, like I would skip down one or two paragraphs on, because you see the same thing kind of being repeated after a while.
I don't know why Scooby-Doo's in there.
But in one of them, there was an idea, I guess, basically doing kind of a performance-based timeline. Like, if it's doing well, it stays in the theater longer. If it's kind of more of a flop, then they've got the option of pulling it and trying to capitalize on video on demand. And I like that idea.
Utilizing the marketing dollars.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's that seems to help out both parties, because if the theater isn't obligated to keep playing this piece of crap movie, that's that's not, you know, some whatever. I mean, whatever. So they're not obligated to keep playing it and wasting screens, that kind of stuff. And the studio can, you know, they can try to milk out whatever money they can elsewhere. And I kind of like that idea. So I don't know why something like that can't be worked out for 2021.
I'm sure it could. And in terms of, like, from my point of view, just should customers, consumers can watch what they want, where they want, pee when they want, pause when they want, snack when they want at normal prices. I mean, don't get me started on people's arguments about concessions. I'm like, you don't have a problem when you go to a stadium or you go to a bar and spend $15 on a drink that costs about 50 cents. So I don't really know what the difference is there, but it is what it is. So you can do all of those things. That's the should version. So what is your shouldn't? Why shouldn't they make that deal? Do you have anything for that, John?
Because they're mean and they should have all the control over a different company's stuff.
All right, Brian, what do you got?
Unfortunately, not a whole lot more. I feel like, again, I think it was Steven Soderbergh that said that a lot of these giant tentpole movies, these 500 millions, these $1 billion movies, that's the holy grail of making cinema. And let's face it, a lot of these directors, a lot of these actors, they want to see their material on the big screen. Mm-hmm. That's what they're making them for. They're not making them necessarily to be consumed at home. So there is a certain amount of leverage that the theaters have, because sooner or later people are going to start coming back, and they will come back, much like the travel industry.
Absolutely.
They will be back. And, So I think there is, short term, there's not much ground for them to stand on, but they do need to work out something that does benefit them, because they shouldn't allow themselves to be just railroaded by the studios. Because if for whatever reason they decided to close up shop in the studios, all they had to do was release it on video or on video on demand, they would be losing a ton of money over the next, you know, decade.
Absolutely. So shouldn't, I mean, what you just said, so I don't need to repeat that. And also, there is a report from CNBC that Warner Brothers CEO John Stanky, that's how I'm going to refer to him.
Stanky leg.
he has it high on his list to have ads be introduced to HBO Max in the second quarter of 2021. I'm going to go ahead and assume maybe at a lower tier, but we don't know that for sure. Many people close to this position that he has have said this could kill the platform. And I find that interesting, because the only way I could see it killing a platform is if it was part of the paid tier. And I'll tell you what, bitches, I ain't going back to commercials. I ain't doing it.
No.
Nope.
As much as I enjoy my HBO Max subscription, if I started dealing with commercials on a regular basis, I'm out.
Yep.
I am so out.
Yep.
I'll be like, wonder who? Nope. I'll buy it. It's fine.
I'll watch that, but
of course you will. All right. So already you're seeing that they are looking for ways to recoup lost costs. And I don't know about you, but I'm not interested in commercials ever again, ever, ever, ever again, ever again. Also, I love movie theaters. So for me, that's a big shouldn't make that deal, because, and it's not just for the enjoyment of it, by the way, I just want to point out, like, thousands of people are employed by the theaters and related businesses. That matters to me. And they shouldn't, just because if you close that window, you're kind of hurting the experience. If you make it day and date, you're killing a large portion of that experience. You're killing a large aspect of how their business works, how they create exclusivity. And I don't understand why, if you want to watch it at home, is 2 weeks really that big a deal for you? I mean, like, it could kill an industry, or it could really hurt an industry. Like you're saying, Brian, 10 years, that could really decimate an industry. If it could keep an industry alive and you got to wait 2 more weeks, wouldn't that be worth it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, and I mean, I can't tell you how many spoilers. Times I've heard somebody say that, well, I'll just, you know, it looks good, but I'll just wait till it comes out on video.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it was DVD at the time, it might have been DVDs or VHS or video on demand or Netflix, whatever they mean by video. You know, it's, well, I'll wait till it looks good, but I'll check it out when it comes out and I can watch it at home. So, yeah, I don't see people, if you're more inclined to watch it at home, I don't see where people would have a problem waiting 2-3 weeks to do it.
I don't either, especially on a streaming platform. If you don't have to pay extra for it, like the Mulan thing was a trial run. That was Disney saying, let's see if we can make money off this. And they realized we can't. That's not going to work for these kinds of movies because they love the theatrical experience. They make a lot of their money from theatrical. So that's interesting. But as of now, based on this news, as well as the earlier deal Universal made, what do you see the future of movie theaters as? Now, we've all agreed we don't see it as this is a death knell, even if they do day and date and that becomes a thing, which I don't think anyone's 100% sure that that's going to be further than, you know, the immediate future. So what do you see the future of movie theaters? Do you feel like there's some other potential here that we're not really even paying attention to? Like, what do you see down the road?
Yeah, I mean, I see it getting back to probably around 80-90% of what we remember it as being. I think it does come back relatively soon. But I do think that this move will, the ripple effect of it will have changes that we're not even noticing right now. That I just don't think it's a little too difficult to predict. But I think there will be, I think the theaters will be fine. I think it's still going to be rough. It's still going to be rough for, basically for all of 2021 for them. Because even if a vaccine is out in 3 months, 6 months, you're looking at maybe that's when people are starting to get a little more comfortable. Mm-hmm. 9 months, you know, your crowds are starting to show up a little bit more. Maybe this time next year for Christmas releases, Thanksgiving Christmas releases, you'll see nearly full theaters.
28 days later, you got a zombie apocalypse.
Stop it! Exactly. Don't be that guy, you jackass.
28 months later, it's like a zombie world. Yeah, I get it. It sounds like a good time.
If I have a nickel every time I've gone to a movie, I swear, every time I put on Twitter or Facebook that I've gone to see a movie in a theater since July, since they reopened in July, I've gotten at least one person giving me a gif of a funeral or telling me I killed their grandma. Or something like every single time. And it's just like, okay, you need a hobby. What about you, John? What do you see as the future?
Oh, what I would like to see in the future is what I kind of alluded to, where we see movie theaters evolve into more of an experience versus just being, you know, kind of meh. You know, ideas off the top of my head is build up that whole family experience, make it where there's an actual arcade or like a full-fledged arcade area or, you know, a dining area or, you know, then you can go into the movie when the movie's ready, that sort of thing where people can go and spend time and enjoy actually being at the theater for more than just let's sit down, eat some crappy food, which I know some people like the crappy food. It's fine. God bless you. I like the crappy food sometimes too. Other times I like my hamburgers that taste like gold, you know, because they have a little bit of gold in them.
It's got gold flakes artisanal potato bun or something.
Right, right.
Instead of Goldschlager, it's gold burger.
Right.
Jesus.
I would like to see the theater experience evolve into something greater. And it can do that. It has the room to do that. And I believe that there is a large group of people who would love it no matter if they love the theater as it is right now, or the people who don't like going to the theater and rather stay at home, you make it more of an experience, they'll start going again.
When things get groovy again, come up and check out the 4DX experience up here.
Is that the one that gives you a vibrator too?
It's a...
Whoa.
It's a giant four-seated vibrator, actually.
Yeah.
That shifts all sorts of pivots in all sorts of directions. Blows wind, motors. Gets you wet, flashes lights. It's pretty badass.
Can we go see an Nymphomaniac on that?
Oh my God. Anyway.
Part one and two.
And Nymphomaniac two. Hey, those are cinematic movies.
I hear you, But the fact that it actually blows water out on you to right. simulate rain or you uh-huh. know stuff or stuff and I, you
oh,
know
what is this again on me again? I thought I'd stop living my life.
I don't
this
know
way.
If I want to see those movies knowing that feature is available.
Alrighty, so I don't.
That set is way too real.
I think there's always going to be a place for movie theaters. There's always going to be a place for it. People that are, again, that keep saying that they're dying and people don't want to go anymore. That's just not true. The math doesn't agree with you. Look at all the countries where they did open back up. People jumped right back to the movie theater. That's like just a safe haven for a lot of people. So I'm with you, Brian. I see that coming back. And since I do love going to the theater. I have no issue being vocal about having exclusivity windows for them. So that's what I would like to see that continue. I don't see day and date happening. I really just don't. I see shortening to 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that, maybe a month. And I really feel like this move is going to hurt mom and pop theaters a lot more than it'll hurt the chains. Because I think chain theaters will be able to find capital to continue. They'll be able to file bankruptcy and restart up. They'll get capital grants. They'll get whatever they need to get. Mom and pop theaters, people that have been run by families for decades, they're the ones.
Even just like regional chains.
Yeah, regional chains too. They're just, it's going to be like the drive-ins all over again. You know, those guys are going to be driven out by chains because chains are the only ones that have the background and the capital to continue in that kind of environment. That's the sad part to me. I'm a big fan of that. I love small business and being able to, I mean, it was like the dream when I was a kid, right? Like if you couldn't make movies, you wanted to, for me anyway, you wanted to open a theater and, you know, have people come enjoy the magic in your theater. And I've never enjoyed the magic on my couch the way some people do. I'm not knocking them. I just haven't. So what do you make of all the fans of home viewing championing the fall of movie theaters as a whole?
I think some of them need to calm down. I think they should just take the win where they can, which is, hey, you're going to be able to watch things at home, as opposed to be like, burn the movie theaters. We don't need them. We still need them. A lot of you still go. There's still stuff you have to go see there.
Yeah, completely agree. I don't know what it is about certain types of people that feel like just because there's some sort of announcement, they're just all of a sudden they're on the hate train, you know, and it's like, where were they 5 years ago? Were they on Twitter or Facebook screaming about how horrible theaters are? No.
Yeah.
All of a sudden it's, oh, this is a potentially bad thing. Well, good. Let them all go under. You're an idiot.
Like, what, did they attack your mom? I don't understand. Yeah. Like, why are you saying exactly. That's so personal?
What's bringing on this hate? So, I personally don't listen to them and I don't give them any credibility at all. Unfortunately, a lot of people are attracted to that. They love to get sucked into it. And it's just, there is a gravitational pull with any kind of, you know, hate speech that people just love to latch on to, and whether they're arguing with them and, you know, interacting with them. Cause if nobody interacted with them, you'll never hear from them again. But other people go, you're an idiot, or yeah, right on. And they get emboldened. And so they keep up with it.
Yeah, I just don't get it. And they, you know, like every time I say I love theaters, it seems like anywhere I get somebody jumping back and like, ah, well, it's over. They're dead. I'm like, okay, well, so I guess you wanted to attack something I love. I'm not trying to take anything you love away. So I don't know why you're getting all up in my grill. Calm down. Just right. Relax. You're being ridiculous.
What about cake? Just take away cake from them.
No. Nobody should ever take cake away from anyone. That's how you get bit.
I'm just trying to help you out, man. Like, all right, fine. Like, take ice cream or something. Take whatever food there's stuck in their mouth. I don't know why I'm associating that kind of person to a fat person, but you know, that's what I'm just trying to say.
Wow. As a former fat person, John, you should really take that back.
No, I won't, actually.
Son of a bitch. All right, Brian, as we wrap up this whole theater portion conversation, anything you want to add or you want to mention or have us talk about or anything?
Honestly, I actually had like three different questions, and I think we've actually covered all three of them, unfortunately.
Wow, excellent. You mean we actually had a good conversation?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, it all had to do with how long this lasts and the repercussions and is it as bad as it sounds and stuff like that. And yeah, sorry, I didn't have four or five written up, but I figured three would have been fucking plenty.
I was going to bring up a couple of things, one of them being the whole Disney thing, which we covered the Disney thing already, mm-hmm. and we covered some of this other, like the evolution of theaters or possibility of evolution, that sort of stuff.
I did hear one of the rumors is Disney's going to mesh Hulu and Disney Plus, so they basically have an adult version, which would be cool if that comes to fruition.
So does Disney own Hulu or something, or yeah. what?
Yep, Disney owns Hulu.
Sure do.
They got it from Fox.
Ah.
Fox had some stuff.
Interesting.
And one more thing that definitely needs to be mentioned is that, and we talked about the talent that had issues with it. I mean, all of the directors and creative partners involved in the making of the films were not aware, so they were very upset, including James Gunn, who made the Suicide Squad and was looking for potential franchise opportunities. And that's one thing we really didn't get into very much, but this could affect franchises because if they're not creating the same box office dollars and they're not getting the same impact, talent's not going to get paid the way that they would like. So they're not going to continue to do a franchise. It might take a hit to franchises because, you know, are they going to continue to make the kind of films that they make now? Are they going to make Wonder Woman 3 and 4 and 5 or whatever, or Batman 16 if they aren't making the same kind of box office revenue that they used to? Because now they can maybe bring the budgets down and maybe instead of doing franchises, they're doing a bunch of other different kinds of films. So it could change how films move forward and you might see less of the multiple Batmans and multiple movies that you love and it might spawn less franchises. It is possible. That's all speculation and we're way too early for that, but just something to think about before we move on. All right, well, we're going to take you to an interview right now. I wanted to bring you all some thoughts from theaters themselves on COVID, on 2020, on the HBO Max deal, the Universal deal, on safety in theaters. So I secured an interview with the general manager of a theater who wishes to remain anonymous. You're going to hear a little bit of a distortion, but that's mostly because our budget isn't the same as CNN's. And that's just how it goes. So enjoy, and we'll see you on the other side. Okay, so I am here with general manager of one of our theater chains. Prefer to remain anonymous. We're going to go by Lance Gerbish. Because why not? Lance, that is your real name. You know, I kind of want to go through what the year's been like for people that actually run a movie theater. So when you initially were told it's time to shut down, if I remember correctly, you were all for it. You're like, whatever it takes for the health of the people, right? I mean, how did theaters prepare for that?
We saw the pandemic coming, and as it got worse, as managers and crew, we all spoke. We had an inkling that we were going to be shutting down, but we were all for it. I didn't want any of my managers getting sick. I didn't want any of my crew getting sick. I've got at-risk people in my household, so of course I didn't want to be taking it home to anybody. And so we were, you know, it was if everybody does this, fantastic. Let's shut down. Let's be safe. Let's do what we need to do. It's for the betterment of everybody. And it just lasted a lot longer than we anticipated.
And as the theaters adapted, you know, you had different things coming out about what theaters were doing to adapt. And what was your initial reaction once you heard that, like, AMC Theaters and Universal, for one, had made a deal that they were going to shorten the exclusivity windows? And I've tried to explain this to people before, but can you really briefly explain how an exclusivity works for you as a theater manager, as well as what that meant by shortening it?
So basically, the exclusivity window means that when a brand new movie is released, for example, let's say Endgame, typically most of the money is made for that film in the first couple of weeks at the box office. So when you see those big grosses of, you know, that movie made $900 million, that's because there were, you know, as we like to say, cheeks and seats. And they were watching the movie, they were coming in, buying concessions. However, the longer that the movie is in the theaters, the attendance does drop off. The exclusivity window, I think it was AMC and Universal that you'd pointed out, I don't see that as a problem as far as running a theater. Your typical, you know, big blockbuster after the second weekend, the attendance does drop off. I mean, there are anomalies. I can't pronounce that word. For example, like My Big Fat Greek Wedding that came out in the 90s, low budget hit that just, it did better as time went on. But that deal that they came up with doesn't mean Universal has to put it on DVD or Blu-ray after 17 days. They just have the option to, if a movie, say, not performing the way they thought it would after that second weekend, then they can put it on Blu-ray to try and make more money from it, capitalize on the market. For example, movies like Knives Out, that opened on Thanksgiving of last year and was doing more attendance on Christmas than it did when it first opened because of word of mouth. So because of that, it would have already been on Blu-ray before Christmas. So they would have been able to kind of double dip in the box office and the Blu-ray. And from my understanding, AMC gets paid regardless of whether it's on Blu-ray or people are coming into the theater. So I think it's a win for movie theaters.
And for years, the exclusivity window has been about 90 days. And the idea it being 45 to 90 days, whatever the number is, so that theaters get exclusive rights to it, and then it goes to home video, and then they can profit from there as well. But the idea is that so it's an event in a movie theater. And so shortening that is a huge deal, but it's a seismic shift in many respects, but it's been a long time coming by a lot of people's perspective in terms of shortening it, not necessarily 17 days, but shortening it to some degree. So then as a theater manager, well, before I get to the HBO Max thing, I got to ask, you know, because you've had to lay people off and furloughs and that sort of thing. I mean, what kind of impact does that take on you as someone who runs a theater? You know, what kind of emotional impact does that put on you and your crew and those that are trying to just give everybody the experience of a movie theater?
It's heartbreaking. Like you asked, you know, the first time, everybody was on board with it. We had congressional support as far as, you know, my team was able to get that extra in unemployment so that they could make ends meet. You know, we're located in a state that just forced us to shut down again recently, very minimal notice. So it was even harder this time knowing that, you know, they were going to be furloughed without pay for an indefinite amount of time. And unfortunately, right now, there's no congressional support. So it's very heartbreaking to have to look at these people that you work every day with. They, you know, we like to say go to war with, you know, for big movies and everything like that. And everything they did to get the theater ready to reopen when we were allowed to, all the sacrifices they made, and then have to turn around and tell them, sorry, but we have to shut down again. It's heartbreaking. It's hard to be positive, you know, like we're going into Christmas, which is typically our busiest season of the year. Movie theaters typically make 25% of their annual income between December 20th and January 3rd for the entire year. And we're going to be closed down. So I don't know. I hope my staff is healthy. I hope my managers are healthy. I hope they're able to make it, and I hope they all come back. But I also understand that they got families, they've got households that they need to help, and I just am wishing them the best and hope that we can show movies again.
Okay, Lance, you're talking about how you've had to struggle this whole year, and I think everybody that manages a theater has to struggle this year. I mean, this year's been insane. And then you get word that Warner Brothers is going to offer this day and date release deal where they're going to release their entire 2021 slate, including like Matrix 4 and Godzilla vs. Kong and a lot of big, big titles that producers didn't know about, theaters didn't know about, talent didn't know about on day and date, which is kind of, it's a violation of the exclusivity window. You know, theaters had made a deal with them over Wonder Woman 1984 because everybody kind of agreed, COVID times, let's work together. But now they want to, it seems, almost take advantage of that opportunity. How does that make you feel as a theater manager or somebody who runs a theater to hear them say that they're planning for the entire year to do that?
We kind of took it as a slap in the face. You know, we've been showing their movies. I've been doing this going on 25 years, showing, you know, Warner Brothers movies and hyping them up and amping them and making sure they had the right amount of seats for the big releases. However, I also kind of took it as they were trying to get theater owners to the table for a Universal deal. With the fact that, you know, I just read an article today that the director of Dune is going after them and Legendary Pictures is going after them, saying this wasn't in our contract either. I don't know how real it is yet, but definitely took it as a slap in the face of, you know, we're coming off probably the worst year in cinema history, not because of anything that the cinemas have done or that the studios have done. It's a pandemic. It's affected everybody. But I do, like you said, I think they are trying to take advantage of it. And I really hope the big three dig their heels in the sand. And I think if they can make a deal like the Universal deal, I'm all for it. But I think Warner Brothers is just trying to get a seat at the table to have that discussion. And so we'll see what happens, where it goes from here.
Does it make you concerned about the future of movie theaters, or do you feel like no matter what, theaters will be here in some capacity?
I mean, just look at the numbers. You know, pre-COVID, 2019 was almost a $12 billion box office year. I mean, we were busy all year. And I think next year, come March, you know, as the new titles start to get released, stuff that got pushed from 2020 into 2021, I think there's still room for movie theaters. I understand why people like to, you know, watch movies at home. However, you know, a movie like, you know, I keep going back to Endgame, but it was such an event movie. It was probably the biggest event movie, you know, this country's seen since Star Wars, the original trilogy, Star Wars. You like to be with all of your friends. You like to see that with a crowd. I know your podcast is big against spoilers, but it's been over a year. But there was
you're covered.
There was nothing like seeing Cap grab Mjolnir for the first time, or hearing Tony Stark say, you know, I am Iron Man at the end of that film, and hearing the audience just gasp or cheer or yell. And you only get that at the theater. You know, you're sitting at home. Yeah, you have a couple of friends over or whatever, but it's not the same as hearing 300 people collectively at the same time react to something that you're seeing on screen. You only get that at the theater. And I'm hoping to do this for another 25 years. I love what I do. I love the crew and whatever steps we need to take so that we keep our guests safe, we're down to do.
Well, I do want to say two things. One, in terms of genre, I know everybody always goes to like the Avengers and those kind of films, but even Knives Out had one of those moments. I mean, at the end of the movie when the knife is the fake knife, that was one of the greatest moments in the theaters last year because people were just, they lost their minds, you know, hooting, hollering, whatever. You don't get that at home unless you're a hooter and a holler in your living room, which is just cool, but weird.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing, you know, you talk about keeping people safe. I have to say, and I keep telling people this, I haven't felt safer anywhere during COVID than I have in the movie theater because of all the precautions that they've taken. It's not packed. It's a very limited capacity. Everybody's clean. Yet people kept saying that, that theaters were a problem. And even contact tracing is now showing that there's no exposure that's been demonstrated from movie theaters because you guys have done such a good job. Does that hurt you as someone that cares so much about this experience that it feels like it's kind of being targeted in a way?
We're an easy scapegoat just because, you know, people always think of packed movie theaters. I can tell you when we came back and we were allowed to open for like the third quarter of this year, the amount of cleaning precautions that we have in place is ridiculous. Just from before we even unlock the doors, the amount of things that we do, that we take steps on. And we're no joke about masks. We're no joke about cleaning up after people. We make sure every theater, every seat is disinfected, not only at the start of the day, but in between each show. We've elongated the space between starts of films for extra cleaning. I feel safer here than I do going to a grocery store because there's always someone in a grocery store that wears their mask under their nose and they're sitting there sneezing and coughing and whatever, and nobody's saying anything. Where I can tell you here, if you don't wear your mask properly, I'm asking you to leave or to put your mask on properly. And if you refuse to do so, I'm asking you to leave. Your little bit of uncomfort of the mask over your nose is not worth my crew's health or my manager's health or anyone else's here. So we're very, very strict on masks and cleaning and all that stuff because we want everybody to be safe. We didn't want to be the cause of an outbreak. And like you said, Aaron, there's been nothing traced back to movie theaters. So I haven't heard of one case coming out of the theaters.
Well, thanks for everything you do. I plan on spending most of my year in 2021 here, no matter what Warner Brothers decides to do. And I think that might change because it sounds like they're getting a little pushback now. And it should be noted, theaters never agreed to that, correct? That was not something that they talked to HBO about, or HBO talked to them about ahead of time, or WB, sorry.
To our knowledge, no. The only an acknowledgement that we understood was Warner Brothers had talked to the big three about Wonder Woman. Like you said, that was an anonymous, I can't say that word.
Just isolated incident.
Isolated incident. A one-off, you know, it was the same thing. The big three never got upset about Trolls or Scoob because movie theaters were forced to close. And they felt that those were good movies to get out for families during the pandemic. We didn't have a problem with that. We understood even, you know, I was running a theater as much as, you know, I wanted to bring my kid to see that in the theater. Understood there's no way to do that. But, you know, going forward, you know, like I said, come March, the vaccine's supposed to be out. It's warmer weather. Hopefully, you know, we could make it till there. And I think 2021 is going to be a very busy time at the theaters. People are going to want to get out of their house. They're going to want to see these movies. You know, people have now waited 12 years for Black Widow, you know. I think we're going to have a good year, and that's what I'm hoping for. So,
well, thanks for what you do.
Not a problem.
Okay, guys, our show is independently funded. Therefore, all of the expenses are from our own pockets, and Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. And once you do sign up for Patreon, you get immediate access to all the content in your respective tier. If you want to join up and help The Hollywood Outsider in 2021, Patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's Patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. And as this is our last regular episode of the year, we're going to have our holiday episode next week and then our Wonder Woman episode after Christmas. We wanted to give a shout out to some Patreon supporters that are hanging with us as we turn to 2021. So thank you to Courtney, Paula, Troy, Zachary, Scott, Jenny, Manuel, Johan, Stefan, Wayne, Nate, Amy, Jim, Tams, Christina, Amy, Andy, Mandy, Laura, Thomas, Justina, Chris, Stanley, Jennifer, Tommy, Brandon, Jose, Angelina, Brian, not this Brian, Stefan, not Stefan, and that's it. Thank you so much, guys. We really do appreciate it. I just want to give everybody a shout out.
Thanks, guys.
Oof. Okay, we're going to close this show up, but we've got two things left. Recent thoughts or recommendations of anything? Brian, you haven't been here in a while. Is there anything recently you watched that you want to mention?
I don't know what the general... I just watched New Mutants the other day.
Mm.
I don't know what y'all's take on it was.
It was not terrible at all.
It was very okay.
All right, well, I'm glad we kind of agree. I felt like it was like cutting the crust off of bread. Like, it missed... Like, it kind of started, like, right in the middle of, like, you kind of walked in, like, 15 minutes into a movie, and you're kind of like, all right, I got this figured out, what's going on. It was just, like, the middle of a movie. It needed a beginning, a little bit of working into it, and it needed a little bit more at the end. But other than that, honestly, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it tried to be a scary movie for comic books, but then got sanitized.
Yeah. Oh. I felt it could have been a little scarier, too. But overall, I was kind of pleasantly surprised.
Thank God you're here. This is very important. I've had to just talk a little bit, but these guys don't understand what I'm talking about, okay? I've got family from down south. You're from the south. Charlie
obviously
Heaton's accent. Was it not the most ridiculous piece of acting you've seen in a long time?
Who's?
Charlie Heaton. He was Charlie Heaton. The hillbilly accent in New Mutants.
Cannonball.
Yeah.
Cannonball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was pretty bad.
That was assault on everything. That was so offensive. I was offended. Well, yeah, and I'm not really
and you know, I'm very picky about Southern accents in movies because it is a lot of them are a little bit too embellished.
Over the top.
Yeah, a little too Gone with the Windy. Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, well, fiddle-dee-dee.
Well, you know, as I understand it, according to that show on HBO with Nicole Kidman, The Undoing, apparently she falls in and out of an American accent a lot.
What is, where did those connect to the Charlie Heaton and New Mutants? You're just connecting accents?
Just a bad accent.
Just bad accent.
Kind of okay. All right.
I thought we were on a thing here. Like,
well, I feel like you were on a thing. I don't think we were invited.
He was sticking with the movie. You were on a thing.
I was on a thing for bad accents. You know who else has a bad accent? That's where I was.
Okay. All right. What about you, John? Anything, recommendations you want to mention?
You know, on a whim, I started watching Stargirl on HBO Max because, you know, eventually I'm going to have to get rid of HBO Max because it's going to piss me off and give me commercials. But I thought I'd get the best out of it to begin with. And I started watching Stargirl, which I was like, you know, this is not going to be for me. I'm not going to really enjoy it. I was wrong. It's a lot of fun. And the use of every little bit of that DC comic lore that they're throwing into there has been pretty great. So Stargirl, it's pretty great.
I watched David Fincher's Netflix drama about 1930s Hollywood that has seen through the eyes of critic and alcoholic screenwriter Herman J. Mankiewicz as he races to finish the screenplay for Orson Welles' Citizen Kane. And that movie is called Mank. And I feel like this is going to be the Roma of the rest of the year. It's going to be one of those movies where critics rave about. And I'm a critic. I'm not on that train. So I'm not with those critics. They're on their own. They can take their own caboose. But it's going to be that.
I'm not with them.
No, I'm not. But it's going to be one of those movies where everybody's telling you it should be best picture and everything else. And I'm going to tell you, no, it should not. It 100% should not. This is a movie, and I love David Fincher. Artistically, it's dazzling. Really captures that 30s and 40s feel, look of the films. I know, Brian, you love those. You would love the look and feel of this. John, go watch.
You'd love to turn it off.
Yeah, you would turn it off, definitely.
My wife asked me to watch it over the weekend, and I said, that's not for me.
Yeah, she would love it. Your wife would love it. I would like to watch it with your wife because she'd probably, her and I could heckle it together.
Right.
But the script, I don't care if it's David Fincher, man. I feel like sometimes we give directors a pass just because we love their work. I love his work. The script sucks. It's so meandering and uneven and disjointed, and it's almost frustrating. Well, we're going for the Citizen Kane vibe. Cool. I can understand that movie. Can't understand this one. I enjoy Citizen Kane to a degree. I don't think it's as great as best movie ever made, but it's a quality film. It's quality made film. I get the acclaim. I don't get the acclaim here. I don't get it. I didn't enjoy watching it, even though I appreciated it. You guys know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's one of those. And people keep saying, well, you just didn't get it. You know, I've already heard that twice. That's my favorite freaking critical remark. Oh, you just didn't get it. No, bitch, I got it. It sucked. I got it. Well, it didn't suck. It was fine. It was artistically wonderful. But you need more than that. You don't just get to coast on, well, I spent all this time making it look great. You guys get pissed at Michael Bay for this. You know what I mean? It's the same thing to me. It's no different than, well, his movies are fun to watch, but the plot is stupid or the script is stupid. Well, it's not the same. You can't say you enjoy them. Same with Fast and Furious. But what's the difference? This looks great. Script is not.
Are there boobs in Mank?
I can't
remember. They're great if there are. So. I don't know what that does for you.
I don't know what that has to do with the quality of the film, but I'm then again, I remember
it does elevate it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. According to John, I heard earlier about his 4DX dream experience. Yeah, I remember.
What do you mean mine? I was just asking, never mind. But, you know, Michael Bay has boobs. Fast and the Furious has muscle in boobs.
Sexy teenagers is more what Michael Bay has, but I get your point. I concede.
Well, Six Underground, they weren't teenagers.
Amanda Seyfried is in it, and she's...
Megan Fox was like 15, but all right.
I just said Six Underground. I went directly to Six Underground.
He went directly to the one where he checked the ID of the lead actress. Very important.
Exactly.
Very important. Well, that's my tank. I'm the stank. That is Mank. All right. So share your thoughts, this episode or anything else on our Facebook.
Wow, did you write that yourself?
No, I just came up with that. Imagine that. We're on Twitter. We have a Facebook group. But on Twitter, we're at BuyPopcorn. Our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com if you have any thoughts. And please rate and subscribe us on your preferred podcast app. You can find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter and at rjohndraws on Twitter. Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk and at Sink Into This. And me and the Blacklist Exposed and Presenting Hitchcock and at Aaron Spurks. Now, before we leave, we'd like to give a host a chance to, in 1 minute or less, tell the audience one thing they learned from any movie or TV show recently. And Brian, you're our guest.
All right. Real quick, and this actually ties in with our topic this evening. Mm. And going forward, anything, any TV show, any movie that you love, I would highly recommend buying it in a physical copy. Buy a physical copy of it. So much of your digital purchases can be, they can be wiped out at any given time. If a studio decides they say want to change, you know, if Apple decides that they want to change something, Vudu or whatever, whatever your streaming service, whatever your video on demand supplier is, if they want to change something, it can be gone in the blink of an eye. And if you think you own it, you don't. You basically renting it. Long-term rental is basically what it is.
Yep.
Also, the video quality is usually a lot better at this time. Now, with this, the way internet bandwidth and everything's expanding nowadays, it may not be as much of a problem coming, you know, soon. But at the time being, I was watching my 4K version of Game of Thrones and the dark scene. I haven't even gotten to season 8 yet. I'm still on like the end of season 2. But there's still so many dark scenes that are so much, just so much better.
Really?
Than streaming it over. Because, yeah, it's
4K.
When you're, yeah, it's 4K. And when you're streaming it, it's like 720p or something like that. Maybe 1080, but it's still, the quality is just not there.
To piggyback on that, if you are a fan of somebody or you are a fan of something as far as buying digital, make sure you invest in external hard drives so you can download a copy to that external hard drive. So you don't, that way, as long as you have a copy of it downloaded to your personal hard drive at any given time, you can always play it again.
There you go. That's a good, yep. It's a good tip as well. So
great tip. Great point. I was meaning to ask you about that when we were talking recommendations, because I knew you got that big fancy 4K Game of Thrones set.
It is so pretty. It is so pretty. It's basically, I think it's the same, because I've got the first few seasons or so of, you know, when they were coming out, I think they were on Blu-ray. So the things like the menus, it's still a little clunky to navigate. So mm-hmm. I don't think they didn't do anything to change that. But actually watching it, it is beautiful.
Want to hear a horror story? This, most people don't.
I know this.
No.
So I got, my brother got me the Game of Thrones 4K last year for Christmas for season 8. So I don't have the whole series, just season 8, maybe season 7. I can't remember for sure. But season 8, and I was so excited because you and I talked about this, Brian. The Long Night is one of my favorite episodes of TV ever.
Yeah.
But on TV, streaming it, like you said, doesn't look fantastic. It's hard to see in a lot of spots. Well, now I had the proper lighting. So I'm watching these things. I'm like barreling through the episodes just to get the Long Night because I love that episode. I don't care what the haters have to say. Write me. Don't give a shit. Love that season. And when I get to the Long Night, my disc doesn't work. And it wasn't like at the beginning. It was like right in the middle when things are really amping up and I'm all into it. And I'm like, and it stutters. It stutters. I had to switch to the Blu-ray because they came with both. They come with a 4K and a Blu-ray. And I had to switch to, I still have to get it replaced, but it was such a sad heartbreak. I'm like, that's the only episode I cared about. The rest of them, Blu-ray is fine. This one, I wanted 4K all the way, but I had to have that one imperfection that caused me a little problem.
That's frustrating.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Definitely.
I feel for you.
That did not sound genuine at all. That sounded like just...
I'm sorry. I feel for you so much.
Better.
So much.
Better. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks again, Brian, for coming by. Really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
John.
Aaron.
You're here. All right. So that's going to do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. And remember that the next time you want to spit in Warner Brothers' face and go to a theater, whenever, buy popcorn. Was that too harsh? I don't care. I mean,
that was too clunky. It wasn't too harsh.
Yeah, that didn't work. It was terrible.
It was. Next time you want to really make somebody mad and to get disgruntled and then kind of maybe like complain to their wife when they get home, you might want to buy popcorn at the movie theater.
I hate you.
Next time you want to end an episode of this podcast, go fuck yourself.
Unfortunately, there are points, there are times during a conversation where...
Absolutely, I get it.
You know, maybe somebody brings something up and you're like, oh shit, I remember seeing this, but I don't exactly...
Let me double check it.
Yeah, let me double check. I want to make sure I'm right.
Yeah, it wasn't that. It was full on, I'm writing a book, and I just happened to be on a podcast at the same time.
Yeah. I would do the same thing as far as, hey, let me check my sources real quick. Unfortunately, I have a mechanical keyboard, and it's like clickety-clack-clack-clack-clack-clack-clack-clack, yeah. And he would kill me for that.
That's why I got to use my phone, because mine's the same way. One
Are we
going
to get a fight? That's my only question.
Is there anything worth fighting over?
Yeah, I don't think it's... I mean, I'll be angry and outwardly, not at you guys, though. You can have whatever opinion you want.
Yeah, but right now, I can't tell the difference.
I'm angry at the people that keep encouraging... Or they want the whole theater system to collapse, and it's like, those are the only people I'm mad at. Because it's like, if you want that, that's fine, but I want the whole thing to collapse. Why am I talking about it now? I should be in the podcast. It's just like, there's thousands of people that have jobs and support families and stuff. I just think that's a dick thing to wish for.
Hey, Aaron, this is Aaron, and this is the Hollywood Outsider Podcast. Let me get through all this stuff real quick. By the way, HBO is going to fuck everything up for everyone.
Let's go. Let's get into it.
We're going to jump straight two-thirds into the podcast before we even start...
Fucker. You ready, Brian?
Fuck you.
All right. John, you ready?
Fuck you too?
Yeah. There we go. I'm in. Here we go. I got to do my little opening. Hang on.
That's what she said.
I was trying to figure out if that works, and I think it does. Yeah.
All right. You know, that's one of those that just, it's like the more you think about it, the funnier it gets.
Yeah. I tried to do it ironically, but there's no ironically about it, which works too well.
You're such a dick dong. All right. I don't know what it meant either.
Yeah. Come on, man. You get to this or what?
I love it whenever you make up words.
Fuck is a dick dong.